You're listening to an Olive Pit production. Welcome to the show. I'll be your host. Let's get to it.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Look for the Helpers. Hello, good morning. Today we have Bree Kelly with us.
Good morning.
As our guest. And then, of course, Dr. Nicole Navega.
Hello.
Last time you had laugh tracks going on with my name.
You've got a lot of followers, Dr. Nicole Navega.
Yeah, that's exactly amazing.
Yes, I didn't even realize we were... you guys didn't know we had our live audience
live
today.
It's better than the laugh track last time.
All right. Bree, we usually start off with a couple of little icebreakers. Okay. And I've got an amazing list. Are we going to do the... Or are we just going to do the one? Do we do them all?
Whatever you want to do.
All right. Because I was thinking about this, and then I thought, man, I don't even remember which ones we've done.
I know. I always want to do them all. But
I know.
It's too many.
It is a lot. Because then we'd just be a whole hour of icebreakers.
Plus, we've already answered the questions. So.
Right. So I'll give you your choice. Okay. You can pick one, or I can pick one for you. So we've got a couple of subjects here. We've got quirky.
Nice icebreaker
questions. Food and drink, personal, general, entertainment, hobby, my favorite, have you ever, or sci-fi? G-rated. Now, these are all G-rated questions. Okay. You can choose one, or I can choose one for you.
You can choose one.
Oh, okay. All right, good, because I looked at this and I thought, what would I choose?
What would be good?
What would I want to answer? So here we go. What I looked at earlier was... Dun, dun, dun. Let me see here. I have something for that too.
Nice.
What is your favorite candy or treat?
My go-to is probably Snickers.
Snickers. Yeah. I love a good Snickers.
It's a good
Snickers.
One. Me too.
Snickers is actually one of my favorites.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Especially their ice cream. Snickers.
Oh. Yeah, or like a Blizzard.
Yeah.
Oh, Snickers Blizzard.
I'm not an ice cream fan.
No?
No. I feel like I'm the only person on the planet that doesn't like ice cream.
Yeah, I think I like ice cream too much.
I'm glad I don't like ice cream. But.
So, Nicole?
I'm a big fan of Snickers. But I think my favorite, I have two. I have to put it into two categories because one would be chocolate. And my chocolate category would be, I don't know if you guys know this, it's something called a crunchy.
A crunchy?
Yeah. We don't even really make them here. It's originally Cadbury, and I think it's European. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like a honeycomb inside of it and wrapped in chocolate. Have you guys ever seen this or had it?
No.
So that when you put it in your mouth.
Is it like an actual honeycomb?
I don't think it's an actual honeycomb. I think it's like a makeshift honeycomb.
Okay.
But it feels like that. It could be. It could be true honeycomb. I don't know, actually. We're going to have to look it up now.
Right. Now I'm intrigued.
So it kind of melts in your mouth. You know, like you put it in and it melts in your mouth. So that's my favorite. It's hard to get. But you can order it. But my other favorite candy would be like gummies. Sour watermelon, for sure, is my favorite gummy candy. What about you?
So I have several different categories of favorite candy or treats.
Yeah.
I really do like let me think who it was. Sherry got me started on...
Cinnamon?
No. Oh. The gummy nerds, the nerd clusters.
Oh, yeah, the clusters.
And she's like, oh, my God, you got to try this. I'm like, no, I don't like nerds.
Yeah.
And then she forced me to try them. And now I am a stockholder.
Yep. Those are good. I know. I had those recently, too, and I had never had them before.
Yeah. So I really do like the gummy cluster nerds or, like, I mean, candy bars. Like, there's so many. But my, like, throwback is a whatchamacallit.
Okay, yeah. Delicious.
Yeah, like caramel, crunch, chocolate.
I like that. Yeah. I like it.
I think that would be it.
I also like, now that you're saying it, I'm hungry though, so what do you call it? Like $1,000 bars?
Oh, the 100 grand. Yeah. Those are amazing. Those it's are so and good. Very similar to whatchamacallit.
Yeah.
Right?
The crunch and the caramel. Yep. Yeah. So yep. good.
And then.
And Heath bars and score, you know, like just toffee.
Yeah. I'm not a Heath not a bar fan.
Oh, I love no. it.
But
love
I will it. Say, I now that we use the Instacart, I don't ever have to worry about this anymore because I could never go into a Publix and walk by the Entenmann's buy one, get one chocolate donuts without buying one, getting one. Yeah. That was always like my worst. Because then, exactly, right? Yeah. And I'd leave one box out and one box goes in the fridge just in case you feel like having one that's chilled or one that's
not. That's right.
But choices. We don't have to worry about that anymore thanks to Instacart.
Yep. I do love Instacart too. Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, Bree, good morning. Welcome. We have, hopefully this is going to be another amazing show because I've seen some of the questions we had for you and I'm pretty excited about this. So,
yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah. So, you work for EMS, right?
Yep.
And how long have you worked for EMS?
4 years for Lee County EMS this summer. And then I worked at Gulf Coast as a tech for 4 years before that.
Yeah. So kind of answered my other question I was going to ask. Had you ever done anything like that before? Or is this your first like...
Big girl job?
Yes. first yeah. responder job.
Yeah. After I graduated high school, I went to EMT school. And then I started at Gulf Coast. Worked through COVID and everything at Gulf Coast. And then got hired with the county.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And how do you like it?
It's good.
Yeah. Was it everything you expected it would be?
Yeah, for sure. When I was at Gulf Coast, I had tested a couple times trying to get in with the county. I think just like working at the hospital and seeing, you know, all the cool stuff being brought in, I'm like, that's where I want to be.
But yeah.
I did learn a lot in the hospital. I tell everybody that, you as a tech especially.
Right. So the difference between hospital life and on the road, emergency medicine life. Yeah. Significant?
Completely different.
Yeah.
Completely. Even, you know, just not going home every night, you know, your change of lifestyle, you're living at the station, you know, 24-hour right. shifts. But the hospital setting as far as like, you know, working a code, you have everybody in the room, everyone's there, you have the doctors, the pharmacists, respiratory. And then I worked on the ambulance and I get my first one and it's like, it's just me and my partner and two firemen,
yep,
you know? And
if they're there. Right? Yeah, exactly. Sometimes more than that, but yeah, but pretty much it's four or five, maybe six of you.
You know, so, and it's cool to have both sides of the emergency care because I knew what happens in the hospital.
Right.
But now it's like I know what happens before we get to the hospital. So you kind of have both sides of that. And I think that also helps with patient care, you know, getting things done before you get there, because you know that's what's going to happen once you get there.
Right.
So
I'm assuming then the stress level is different from what you used to do to what you do now.
Yeah, I would say probably more just because you're more on your own. You know, at the hospital, you're just around everybody all the time.
Right. And now you have more of a responsible role.
Correct.
Because there's only five of you at most times. And so how do you deal with that? How do you deal with the increase of stress? How do you deal with offloading that stress?
I think looking back when I was working at the hospital, I worked out, I was younger, fresh out of high school, just living at mom and dad's and going to work every day, you know? Once I started on the ambulance, I think it was 3 weeks in, I was still an intern. I had my first pediatric call and, that was like, all right, this is, you know.
Yeah, this is real.
Yeah, this tough. Is, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I got back to the station and I just started writing down the call. And I told myself, like, this is something I'm going to do. Every time I get a bad call is just journal, you know, so journaling is a big thing. And I brought it up to Nicole once we first met that I journaled and, you know, we talked about doing a writing group, which we still need to.
We need to. There's a bunch of writers out there. We're doing this.
So do you journal the good stuff too, or do you journal, like, do you just journal out your whole day, or how do you do that?
I think before I wasn't journaling the good stuff, just the bad calls and everything, and I feel like doing that, it kind of makes it like a negative thing, like I don't want to have to write today because it's just going to be about bad things. So definitely journaling the good things, you know, stuff I learned on the call or accomplishments made, you know, just to have a balance of both of that for the journal. Then I also go to the gym. I was very athletic growing up, so just working out's always been a thing. Just putting your headphones on, put on whatever music you want to listen to, just, you know, shut out the world for a little bit.
Are you like Mike Cunningham, who says that it has to be like head-banging heavy metal, or no, you listen to a variety of things?
No, I listen, not head-banging music. Okay.
No? So I got to tell you, I get in my headphones when I'm at the gym, and I've got to have like, it's got to be fast tempo, hard. Let's do this.
Yeah, no, it's that. It's not like country or like love songs.
In my truck, I'm listening to country or Elvis.
Yeah.
Well, I drive a 1960. I have to listen to Elvis. But when I'm at the gym, it's like, you know, Ozzy Osbourne and biting heads off of bats and stuff like that.
All right, I like Ozzy. Some Black Sabbath.
Yeah, I just feel, it just gets me pumped, gets me amped. So.
I like it. Then making sure you're good with your coworkers, you know, checking in on them, making sure that they're good, talk to them after a call. Also just checking in on them about, like, their home life, you know, because things aren't good there. It can affect their day at work. And then checking in with your spouse, having a supportive spouse. Most of you know the wifey, Brooke. She worked for a dispatch for 6 years, so she has an idea of what we do, the stress that we, you know, have, the calls we go on. So having someone to come home to with that support, you know, makes things easier for sure.
Yeah, having a sounding board at home is important. Yeah. And, you know, there are so many families out there that are, you know, not entirely public safety. Right. Although I will say it seems to be that there are many that are, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Either firefighter, firefighter, nurse. Yep. That's, I think, the most common. Top, yeah. My wife is a nurse. Mm-hmm. We met in the ER. So of course she's familiar with a lot of the things that I see and do. And so it is good to come home and have that, but sometimes you don't want to burden them either. You know?
Yeah.
I feel like that. Like sometimes I just feel like, why, she doesn't want to hear about this, you know?
Yeah.
So it's good to have other people in your circle that you can talk to. So what about did you do any sports?
Yeah. Growing up, I did martial arts my whole life. My dad owned a karate school. I don't ever talk about that. Nicole loves to.
I love to tell everyone that Bree's a black belt.
Yeah. So I started training. I don't even remember really. I took my first steps in the dojo, and then it was just like, this is it. I did that.
Do you have video of your first steps, and can we have it?
I'll have to ask Dad. All right. Mom was at work, and I just walked.
We'll attach it to the video.
Yeah. Mom wasn't
very
even
first
there.
Steps.
Yeah. Mom wasn't even there for that.
That's perfect.
And then I did that up until I was like 20. Grew up my whole life, you know, 5 days a week in the dojo.
That's cool.
Once I was like 10-ish, I was teaching the little kids. I think they were like 5 to 7 year olds.
Right.
And then I would train for my class the next hour, which was 10 to 12, and then the adult and teenage class, but I would stay because I was with my dad, so I'd be there 3-4 hours a night, 5 times a week.
That's kind of cool, though, because you grew up in a dojo, surrounded by all of those things, and you know, a lot of that is based on mental discipline, mental clarity, you know, being self-aware, all of those things, and I think that's really probably helpful for you now today in your current
career. For sure, I tell people that, and I think being so young, I had no idea, you know, like what I was actually, you know, I learned self-defense. I knew that I was fighting. I knew that I was, you know, doing these things. But when you're 10, it's kind of like, well, I'm just doing this for fun. This is, you
right.
know. And then as you get older, it's like, you know, it's who I am now is because of karate and self-discipline, and motivation, determination, you know, self-control, just having all those things that I didn't even realize I was learning. And then having my dad as my sensei was a whole nother thing because I didn't have it easy.
Are you an only child?
No, there's three of us. I have an older brother and a younger sister. My brother trained.
Okay, I was going to say, did you guys all spar? And then
at
home on Saturdays when somebody was in the bathroom for too long, did you guys end up, karate kidding?
Yeah, me and my sister are 16 months apart. She's like, were complete opposite. She tried karate. She didn't want to sweat. She didn't like to be yelled at.
That would be me.
I never had the chance to quit. There was never an option for me to just be right. like, I'm done. Her? Yep. Right. I'm done. She didn't like dad yelling at her.
Right.
I'm like, okay. Yeah.
But I think what you're talking about is a really interesting point, which I think serves you well in this field because it is a never quit attitude, yeah, right?
I mean,
you learn that you get knocked down and you have to get back up, yeah, right?
Right.
And I think that's very similar to what you do here, right? Like you get beat up all day and you might get down for a minute and you got to get back up and go to the next call. And I think it's a really important parallel that it's a mindset.
Yeah, you have
it's
to
a mindset.
It is. And so, you know, that brings up a great question of like, do you think that that's how you get through? Because we're very busy. Lee County EMS is a very busy organization, right? We're a very busy service. And there are days where you can be in that truck all day long, especially during season, you know? So is that how you get through the day? And is that how you maintain such a positive outlook? Because I would say you are probably one, and there's several people, but you're probably one of those people in the organization that gets along with everybody, right? So is that how it works? Like, is that you've just got that mentality? Like, you just got to stay on top of the horse, and sometimes you fall off, but you got to get right back up.
Yeah, I've also never seen you upset. Like every time I've ever seen you out in the wild, you're
out in the wild,
just
like
totally,
that.
Totally happy, you know, and fun.
Yeah, I think, just knowing that, keep on going. It is what it is.
It's going to get better.
Right. I get along with everybody. I think just having that positive attitude that you're talking about, no one wants to, I think it's because that's what I don't want to see. You know, if I'm having a bad day, I don't want to be like, see Nicole and she's, hey, we're all here and we're all doing the same job.
Right.
Everyone's going through something, whether it's at work, it's at home, so just being that positive, making people laugh, being funny, that's just,
right.
I was a class clown in school.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
I was good. I respected my teachers, but I did, try to make everybody laugh and be the funny one.
Right.
Yeah.
But that also makes me happy, knowing, hey, if I made your day even 1% better, then right. we're good.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree. Yeah. And that's, I think, on my shifts, everybody has those bad days or those days where even they're not bad days, but you just seem like, man, we just keep going. I just went available and now I got another call and then I just went available and I got another, and it's summer and it should be slowed down and we haven't eaten yet. And I just want to pee, but you've got to just keep going. And I think that is one of the biggest things is it's so important to just, okay. All right. Well, you know what? We'll get it next time.
Yeah.
And when other crews see that, I always just hope that it rubs off on them.
And right. And that's the thing.
You're always the same way.
Yeah. Just, just asking someone how they're doing, how's the kids, how's the wife, things like that. Helping clean up their truck while they're, just stuff like that. You come out and you're clean, your truck's clean. You're like, oh, that was pretty cool.
Right.
Thanks. Because again, they could be having just as bad as a day as I am, but so you pay it forward, then you take care of the next crew. And I think that just keeps everybody's,
attitude.
We're all going through it.
Yeah.
Everyone's tired. Everyone's hungry. Everyone's hot out. You're just annoyed. You're like,
I agree.
But just little things like that make the days better. So
with that being said, how do you deal with the people who aren't you, right? The people who aren't always bubbly and nice and pleasant to be around, because we have some people like that, right? There is some negativity that comes with this job, particularly because we're such a large organization.
Yeah.
How do you do that? How do you deal with having a partner that's challenging or bumping up against people who are just not nice? What do you do?
I think staying positive even around the negativity, because like Brian said, everyone feeds off of that. So it's you want to be negative. I'm not going to let that make me have a bad day, because now we're really going to have a bad day, because now both of us are just in a crap mood. and being on shift for 24 hours, being miserable, it's not, you know. So just, again, checking in like, hey, are you good? Because maybe that's all it is. Maybe they just need someone to talk to.
Right.
Maybe they need to let it out. Maybe that's just who they are. Yeah. But I think it's important to, like, just remember, like, hey, like, they might be going through something. Maybe they're not being like this because they're, you know, just because there's a reason.
Right. Yeah, like not taking it personally.
Right, like, yeah. I didn't, you know, we just got here. Why are you already mad? You
right.
know? So checking in because maybe that will fix a thing. And then, you know, just, again, being that positive person, laughing, making jokes, and hopefully that'll, you know.
Right, yeah. So I don't know if it works. Actually, I do know it works sometimes because I always get text messages. Yeah. But one of my things is I always try to be witty on the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Like respectful and within the boundaries.
Yeah.
But I always try to be witty on the radio. A, it makes my day a little bit better because I'm like,
can you're getting your own little chuckle. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, dispatch sometimes always, you can tell that they're laughing or chuckling or whatever. But then, you know, sometimes I'll get a text message like, ah, can't believe you said that. You know, it makes your day go better. And I'm sure it makes somebody else's day better. Because when I hear something like that on the radio, it always makes me chuckle. Like, that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
You know, and so,
and it's the little things like that. Like,
So
I always feel like just about the negativity, I always feel like, one, I think that's an awesome answer because I think if you think about the other person as not just being, you know, a jerk and thinking like, oh, there's probably something going on, right? If we could only see each other like that all the time instead of making assumption about them being a jerk.
Yeah.
But also for those who have those days or moments of just being not wanting to be there, not wanting to be at work, to remember that your negativity does impact the other people around you, right? Like that's the one thing that I wish that people truly understood was that this job is hard enough as it is.
Right.
And to have to deal with a coworker who's, you know, being difficult or, you know, yelling at you or just whatever it is, it's just, it's hard enough. We should take care of each other.
Yeah. You know? And like, just take a step back. You know, if you're the one having the bad day, just remember why, like, why are you here?
Right.
Why do you do the job? Remember that you make a difference, you know?
Right.
Right.
It's okay to have bad days. That's why I always say it's okay to have bad days, but every day can't be a bad day.
That's right.
So. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
For anybody that's having a hard time struggling through this career or just maybe it's daily home life or whatever, what would you say to them? What kind of advice would you give them?
Don't be afraid to reach out. You know, I think it's different with my generation or like the younger, you know. When I first got hired here is actually when Nicole started here. So it was kind of like at NEOP, it was just like, hey, this is what we have. And so that's kind of all I known is the peer support group. And but having like social media, like we're just exposed more to like mental health and mental health awareness rather than someone, you know, you're a little bit older. But when you were 20, you didn't have, you know, Facebook and Instagram, TikTok videos of, hey, it's okay to not be okay.
Right.
You know? So just ask for the help, talk to somebody, you know? I think it's also hard that for first responders to admit that we're struggling because that's just the way we're built. You know, we deal with things and we move on and you don't know. And then sometimes it's like, hey, you know, like, it's probably been a couple months since this was a thing, but I was coming home from work and just being like super like impatient, frustrated. And Brooke was the one that was like, are you good? You know, like, and to me it's like, yeah, I'm fine. Like, why are you?
Right.
Like, yeah, I'm good. But
not noticing your own
my
mood.
Own thing, right? Yeah. And she's, you know, I wasn't angry at her or at the kids. I was just frustrated, you know, for no reason. But it was because I was tired. I was coming off shift. I was just exhausted. And then I brought it up to Nicole when we talked. And I had like a 2-station rotation. So that month I was 5 minutes from home. and at a really busy station. And then the next month I would go to a station that was 25 minutes from home, not busy at all. And those months I would come home and I'd be completely fine. And Nicole's like, listen, you have a 5-minute drive. You're not giving yourself that time to like decompress before you get home.
Right.
And to switch from that like fight or flight, you know, like always on your toes kind of thing to, hey, you're at home now. You don't have to be so on edge kind of thing. And that, you know, stop for a coffee, go to the gym before you go home, just take a drive, you know, don't rush home because you're not giving yourself that time to.
Yeah, that makes sense too.
To like, chill.
Yeah. Give your, even, you know, because there are some stations and I always think, oh, wouldn't it be nice if I literally worked across at that station, which is 7 minutes from the house. But, you know, that makes sense. You know, having that decompression time,
right?
You know, listen to your music. Drive your 1960 truck with the windows open and no air conditioning. It's fine.
That's right.
There's you actually do you go to the gym or do you?
Yeah, no, I go to the gym. Yeah.
Do it at home.
No, at the gym.
Right yeah,
there. Yeah.
Yep. Is there is the gym far? Like,
no, we live pretty close to the gym.
Yeah.
Yeah, like 5 minutes.
How are you adjusting? Because you've just moved to nights now, right? Like you're on a 12-hour truck and you're doing nights. How's the adjustment there?
At first, I was like, oh, I don't know, because I've been on 24s for you know, almost 4 years. When I first started here, I wasn't, you know, I was single. I didn't have kids. I was just me living at mom and dad's. So I would work 24, 48, whatever, because that was that. Now having the kids, it's, you know, you're gone for a full 24 hours, sometimes 48, and you're missing, you know, sports, school things, just being home to help. So I was like, you know what, 12's at night, I'll just be gone when they're sleeping. So it can't, you know, Brooke also used to work the 12's on dispatch. So we kind of had that, like, you know, I was nervous for 12's because I was just like, I'm going to be at work 5 days a week sometimes. You're definitely at work more.
Yeah.
More days, less hours. But I think I've adjusted to it pretty well. I think, you know, I get to spend the day at home with the kids, the family, doing whatever I have to do, get my sleep in before I go in. Some nights I sleep at night, some nights I don't. But I think I'm more well-rested for sure, even just being on the 12s. You know, I come home and I'm ready to go. Like, what are we doing today, you know?
So you're on nights. Do you ever come home? Like, do you have, like, a set? I come home, I take a 3-hour nap, then my day starts.
I'm not like set on that. I think it just depends on how my night went. Cause I'll definitely get a nap in before I go in. And then, like I said, some nights we're in station all night and I got lucky and I'm like, I don't need to sleep the first half of my day away. But there are nights that we've ran all night and I get home and I'm like, listen, like, babe, I got to lay down for a little bit. And she's like, all right, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I wouldn't really, I mean, I think it just depends on how the night, my night goes, is what happens the next day.
So you do journaling, you use the gym, you take a longer route home. Is there anything else that you, any other types of therapy or anything else that you have used or that you use to break up your daily routine or you use to cope with the things that you see and do?
Yeah, so going back to about being like the younger generation, seeing all this stuff on social media, they had, someone had posted this video about the EMDR, the light therapy, and I brought it up to Nicole, and she was like, I think the first time I did, we didn't have the setup yet.
Probably.
Yeah, it was like kind of a newer thing for us. Then she did, and so I was actually having, after Hurricane Ian, I was having like horrible nightmares. I would just wake up. It'd be like I'm on the beach, running down Periwinkle, you know, just things that I had seen from working out there during after the hurricane. The Blackhawks would be flying around, all the, you know. I talked to Nicole about it. She's like, why don't we try EMDR? I'm like, okay. Like, I don't know how. I was like very like.
Some people call it the voodoo stick.
Yeah.
So you were pretty skeptical.
Yeah, because I'm like. When I watch the videos, it's just like, you know, oh, you're going to sit here and this light's going to go across and you're going to like hold these things that vibrate in your hand. And I'm like, how is that going to fix my, you know, like, okay, right. whatever. And so when Nicole's like, listen, like, let's try it, I'm like, again, like, all right, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But if it does, then cool. So I was like, let's just, but she said you have to have, like, you got to have, like, that mindset, like.
It might work.
It might work.
Right.
Because, you know, so we did it. And at first I was like, you know, I'm like, this is, how is this going to help? I'm just watching this light bounce back and forth, and I'm still seeing what I'm telling her that I was going through. And then I don't know how long we did it for, like, that session.
We just did that one session.
Yeah.
I think. I don't think
so,
we.
Okay, so that was going to be my question. Like,
yeah.
So I was going to ask, okay, after your first session, you went home and nothing changed, or?
No, like, halfway through this light therapy, like, she talks about, like, the stuff that you say you feel, and then the light stops, and then you tell her what you're seeing or how you're feeling. And then, like, all of a sudden, my whole story of, like, this nightmare that I had told her about, like, changed stories. Like, it was, I'm like, wait a second. Now I'm like, okay, this is working. Like,
So we used for that particular, because I think we talked about this when Robin Jackson was on.
Right.
Is that there are a lot of different protocols that you can use, but the D in EMDR stands for desensitization. Yeah. And so that was the tactic we took, was how do we desensitize this recurring nightmare that you're having so that it doesn't have that kind of intense emotional reaction for you?
Yeah, like in my dream, I don't want to call it a dream, but I would be running down Periwinkle. All these houses are destroyed. The Blackhawks are flying around. And, like, I'm just, like, sprinting, trying to, like, get to this Blackhawk that I, whatever, you know. And then I would wake up, and I'm, like, sweating. My heart's racing. I'm, like, okay. And then in EMDR, like, we talked about it. And then all of a sudden, I'm not sprinting anymore. I'm, like, I go from sprinting to, like, a light jog. And the helicopter ends up landing at the end of Periwinkle. And I'm, like, telling her, like, the helicopter landed. Because in my dream, this whole time, I'm, like, trying to get to it because I'm by myself. I'm freaking out. That was it. And I was, like, you know, so I told her, I was, like, all right, we'll see. That was
a while ago.
Yeah.
And more than 6 months ago,
for
probably.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And
maybe even a year.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm confused. Okay. I just need some clarification. Mm-hmm. So you're telling telling her about a dream that you've been having, mm-hmm. right? I've been having this recurring dream because I can totally tell you I'm having this dream.
Yep.
Okay. The light starts. You got the
buzzers and headphones. I call them
the vibrators. But you got buzzers, the vibrators in your hands.
Yep.
Okay. And you're watching the police bar.
It does kind of look like that, actually.
Okay. And you're standing there and you're talking through the dream, the parts that you remember, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now Nicole says some voodoo stuff, and then you start talking about what you remember again.
I like repeat this. Like,
yeah, you repeat the story, but right. Now the story's changing because, okay.
And that's okay.
Yeah, so
I'm just trying to understand the process because obviously you're not asleep, right? You're not having the dream, mm-hmm. right? So,
and that's the weird part. I was like, because I told her at first, like, there's no way this is going to work. Then I'm like sitting there doing it, and I'm like, and she's like, okay, tell me what you feel. Tell me what you're seeing. And I'm like, wait a second, like. Why, you know, like, now everything's changing, and then, like, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually a script.
Right.
I say the same thing over and over and over again to her. Essentially, the idea of doing a desensitization is that you stay focused on the target.
Right, so you're she focused gives me, on the helicopter.
Yeah, she gives me a target that she has described that I have written down verbatim from her. And I basically read her words back to her, what she told me, which is essentially a distress level score, right? Okay. She gives me a distress level score. That's sort of the peak of her distress. So she gives me a snapshot of the peak of her distress. And then we run the light, and then it's a script. And every time we finish the light, well, we breathe a few times, calm our body, because what we want to happen is we want her to be able to recall, well, anybody, right. to recall the event, be able to talk about the event inside of a calm body.
Right.
So each time we're doing a little bit of body work in between that. And I say, coming back to the original targeted memory, which we had already had scripted,
right.
what's changed now? And so that's kind of what she's referring to, is that the desensitization technique allows the brain during your like REM, your REM state, to essentially change that memory into a memory that's more palatable.
Right. So
it starts to change.
Do you have the dream anymore?
I don't. And it's crazy.
Well, so the funny part about this is that she comes in like, I don't know, a few weeks later for a follow up. And she's her regular like bubbly self. And we're just doing an update on whatever's going on in the world. And like, I don't know, a bunch of time went by and I was like, so it was almost as if she didn't, she almost didn't even remember that she had originally come in for nightmares. And so I was like,
I'm like,
how's the nightmares? And you were kind of like, oh, yeah. Actually, I haven't had any.
Yeah. And that's awesome. Me and Brooke just watched Land of Bad on Netflix.
Okay.
10 out of 10. It's a great movie.
Okay.
But the opening scenes have, like, Blackhawks, the movie starting. And I, like, made a joke to Brooke. I'm like, here we go. Here comes the PTSD, you know, because.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have.
No issues.
Nothing.
So now moving forward to today, yeah. I mean, you tell the story as you remember the initial dream, mm-hmm. right? So you recount both events, but have no issues with it.
Yeah.
So you remember the dream you were having.
Yeah.
But you remember how it changed.
Yeah.
This is very.
Yeah. The switch of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime the hurricane, you know, it's all.
Sure.
It's crappy. But just having that, like she said, like it switches. So it's not like seeing the Blackhawk. Yeah. Of course. It like brought up like, oh, here we go.
Right.
But like in my brain, I guess from doing, something switched. It had to have because it was probably like almost weekly that I would wake up.
So you were having these frequently.
Yeah. And it wasn't even like talking about, like I would just be about my normal life. Like we don't see Blackhawks every day around here. So it's not like something mm-hmm. would trigger that.
Well, we all remember it felt like a war zone, right? With that.
Right.
Yeah. The helicopters flying overhead.
When we talk about EMDR, for these events, now that event was pretty fresh, right?
Yeah.
Does that matter? So we could talk about an event that happened 25 years ago.
I have somebody recently that came in and was talking about an event that happened 25 years ago. Very, very traumatic event that happened 25 years ago. And what ends up happening is what she's talking about, this the memory changing. A lot of times I know that it's working because oftentimes people will say, oh, it almost starts off like, they'll tell me what they remember. They'll tell me what they may remember. They'll give me like three or four times in a row, they'll give me a description of what's happening, which will be the original memory. And then they'll start to say something like, everybody's different, but essentially it goes like this. Oh, that's weird. It's a little blurry now. I can't quite pull up the image as clear as I could. Or it was in color and I could hear sounds and now, because they'll feel like they're right in there in the moment because we're activating their REM state.
Right.
So that, or they'll be like, oh, that's weird. You know, like it's in black and white or I don't hear any sound anymore. And then eventually they'll start to say, oh, that's weird. I'm now hovering above the scene and like I'm looking down on it or I'm across the street watching myself in the scene. So it creates this emotional distance between that person and the event enough so that their body is calm and they can talk about it. Almost like sometimes they'll say, I feel like I'm watching it through my police vehicle's window or whatever it is, right? Like they create this distance where first they're right on scene, it's first person. And then they're
you've said that before.
Somewhere
you've
else.
You've used that analogy before where they're watching somebody else do what they were doing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just creates that. It creates that emotional distance. And we're working on having it in a calm body. So those two things combined. I mean, the desensitization technique, I think, is the most profound and the quickest resolution for people where they sort of walk out and they don't know right away, but within a couple of weeks, they'll say, like, I don't even know how this works. You know, like, it's gone.
It's weird to explain.
Like Bria is saying, I don't know how it worked.
I don't know, but it did work. So,
yeah.
You know, and that goes back to the, you know, not being afraid to reach out and, you know, scared to ask. Because had I not said anything to Nicole about what I was going through and trying to, like, act like everything was cool, I'd probably still be waking up weekly, you know.
Yeah. So. Well, and you said something a little bit ago that, you know, that I'm older, mm-hmm. which... It's okay.
Is a fact. It is a fact.
But yeah, like you're that, you know, that just brings up a little bit of generational differences, right? Your generation, I think, is a lot, it's a lot easier for you guys to say, hey, I need to talk to somebody about this.
Right.
Whereas for my generation, we were always, and I don't ever remember being taught, like, you don't talk about your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we were just always growing up in a world that, you know, definitely our parents and our parents' parents were always taught, you don't talk about personal life outside of the house.
Right.
And so then it kind of, you know, maybe they didn't talk about it, but they definitely practiced it. Right. And so that's how my generation learned. Like, we just, you know, keep it in and, you know, whatever. And so I think for my generation, it is a little bit harder to be able to say, hey, you know, maybe I do need to talk to somebody. And who do we talk to about that? Because we don't want anybody to think that we're weak or, you know, we're less of a man or a woman for that matter. But I do think it's important to be able to say, yeah, this could probably work for me. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is something I need to talk to somebody about. So.
Yeah, I want to say a couple of things about that. One, the person that I was just referencing about recently coming in about a 20-year-old event is obviously older too.
Right.
Well, so this person has asked for help multiple times. So there are people in our generation.
I'm not going to lie. I'm getting ready to look at my calendar to book.
Yeah, you're like, I got to do some EMDR. I've been feeling you coming to that place.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But this is the second point I want to make about it is that I want everybody to know that I'm not the only EMDR resource in this county. You know, we've vetted plenty of clinicians out there who are doing EMDR. And if people don't want to come see me because they don't want to talk to me or... You know, there's a lot of people who will say, well, like, I think she's on the administrative team or she's close with them or she's going to tell people my stuff.
Let's do this. We'll get some links and we'll add some links to the show here. So you have those. That access to those providers.
And when Robin was talking about EMDR, I mean, she did it through iBoss counseling here in Cape Coral. So. Right. They see a ton of first responders in the community. They're very well trained. They're very good.
Yeah.
So that's a local resource in here, and we have others that.
Just know too that like we had this conversation before. Like, everything that if you go and see Nicole, everything you do and say and talk about is completely confidential.
Yeah, I'm bound by HIPAA.
Yeah, like, so it's no different from anything we do in our daily profession. Yeah, you know. So just have that reassurance, you know, I have no issues talking with any, you know,
but I also get people
that has no concern of mine.
Yeah. But I get that people feel sometimes like, even if it's like, I don't take it personally, if people are just like, I don't want to see a therapist that works in my department.
Sure.
Cause sometimes like the truth is, you guys know, you see me out and about everywhere, right? You might see me at an in-service or, and people sometimes don't want to unload all of their trauma and then have to see their therapist
out and about.
At a hospital or function.
Whatever, sure. You know? Yeah. So I totally get that. Yeah. I don't know that I would want to do that, but I personally think it's a great model that we have somebody in house.
I also understand
that people don't want to do that. They don't want to mix work with their stuff.
I think it is too, because I mean, we have that option where, you know, you don't have to maybe wait as long as, you know, if there's something going on, you know, unless you're tied up with something or out of town or something, like, you're pretty accessible. Am I wrong?
Yeah. I mean, this week I took a call at 11:30 at night, you know, a couple of days ago, I was on the phone until 9 o'clock at night. I mean, people reach out and I as best I can, I try to pick up the phone if I can.
Sure.
Yeah, but like Ryan, like you wouldn't be able to call.
You wouldn't call your outpatient doctor, like therapist
office,
at 9 o'clock at night.
Right.
Yeah, right. Be,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not encouraging people to call me at 11 o'clock at night.
No, I know. But, I'm just and saying, I'm not, if I'm not you trying need to encourage me, like, that either.
I do my best to, right. to be
yeah,
there.
No. Yeah, yeah.
I am extremely busy, though. So I do, some people's text messages sometimes get buried or, you know, I can sometimes fall short. I'm not perfect.
Yeah.
Well, but I try my
but
best.
But I think the model that we have here, having you in-house, so to speak, is amazing. You know, and that goes for, because you're also working with Fort Myers Fire Department, Fort Myers Police Department.
I got my secret FMPD canine hat on right now.
Oh, nice. I like that.
This is like a very coveted thing.
Is it?
Yes.
I need to work on some coins.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. That's like EMDR sounds, every time we've, you know, this is the second time we've talked about it. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'll be the next guest on our show.
Yeah, let's do it. Anything else you want to talk about?
I don't think so.
All right. We're gonna do this writing group.
I know. We've been talking about
it.
All right.
Well, so let me
ask
you.
We got Mike
this.
For sure that wants to do it too.
When you write, I mean, you journal, like, and everybody's journaled a little bit, but do you ever write, like, have you ever started writing like a monologue or like a book, or have you ever tried to dip into that?
Yeah, so I wanted to change. I wanted to make like my journals into a book. So
yeah.
It's just like, but it'd be kind of hard because it's just so many different like stories. Like it's not one giant story that's like start
right,
to finish.
Kind of runs
it. Yeah,
into
it's just
each
a bunch
other,
of different.
Right?
Because
you know everybody, and there's not a person. There might be one or two, but there's not a person in the first responder world that hasn't said, you could write a book about everything I've seen, right? It would be a top seller, or, you know, when I'm done, I'm going to write a book because the things that we see and do are funny, you know? So some of them are unbelievably outlandish.
Right.
Like you just
up.
Can't make these things up.
Yep.
And some are traumatic and heartbreaking, you know? But that's the world we live in. And I think a book, if somebody were to actually write the book that everybody says they're going to write.
Well, my vision for the writing group is getting a bunch of people together writing pieces so that we could, you know, at the end of the year, publish, because we could self-publish it.
Sure.
You know, publish a book, not a book, but like almost like a magazine, right? That has everybody's pieces, whether it's poetry. Like some people are poets.
We had Mike here
for sure. Yeah, and he's an unbelievable fiction writer.
He is an awesome writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, he's an awesome artist.
Yeah. Oh my
gosh.
As
a whole.
Yeah.
Because I've seen a lot of his art and just it's crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so and it's a great outlet for him. Yeah. So that's the vision. We're gonna get.
I like that. So, all right, we're gonna post some links for some other providers here on the show in the comments or somewhere.
Yeah.
And we'll figure that out. Yeah. And Bree, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks
it's been great.
Thanks, Bree.
And we hope to see you again soon. And our next guest is
we've got somebody else coming up.
Yeah, a firefighter coming in.
Yeah,
soon.
From Cape Coral.
Yeah, at the end of the month. So there should be another one out soon.
Yeah.
All right, guys, thanks for listening. It's been great. Have a good day.
See ya.
See ya.
This has been an Olive Pit production. We hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening.